Well, last month I came across this news story. It said a top US health official has warned the country is facing an epidemic of loneliness that is as dangerous to health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. It says, in order to tackle this, Mr. Murphy has called for a collective effort to mend the social fabric of our nation. We need pro-connection public policies, is what he said. It's odd, isn't it? Pro-connection public policies. We are the most connected generation in history. You can message anyone, anywhere, and have a worldwide audience for your thoughts. And yet he's right, because studies show actually the loneliest group in our society today is not the elderly, it's the young people, the people who are the most digitally connected. Increasingly, we can conduct life without ever having to interact with real people. A lot of education is now online. You shop online. If you go to a supermarket, you go to a self-checkout. If you phone for customer service, you're faced with a computer. And I must admit, all these claims about AI, if AI is so good, why is it so bad at answering phone calls? You know, why is it so incapable of actually answering the question I have about my tax return or whatever it is? You know, you know what it's like. Computer says no. It's not one of the options. And it's not that technology is inherently bad. There are many benefits. There are good things about these things. But it's never cost-free. If you remember that New Year sermon, you can't have your cake and eat it. We can't bend and create reality to suit ourselves because we live in God's universe. And therefore, we need God's wisdom to know how to live in his universe. And we need help with something as basic and simple, you would have thought, as friendship. We all know about friendship. We can sort that out ourselves. Well, if so, that can't be the case. We must actually be a bit rubbish at it if we are so lonely. And the reality is, the more that we have turned away from God's wisdom, we actually end up having to relearn the obvious as a society. I came across this advice to some secondary school kids recently, something that to me is obvious in God's universe, but somehow it clearly is not obvious today. They were told this: there is a strong link between kindness and anxiety. People who are kinder to others have a better self-esteem, which leads to improved confidence and less worries and anxiety. You see, we love to think that we are in an enlightened age, and yet people of the past understood this much better. Look what it says in Proverbs: an anxious heart weighs a man down, but a kind word cheers him up. It was all said 3,000 years ago and before. And yet, do you notice there's a difference in what Proverbs is saying to what that advice to the school kids was? Did you notice that the concern in that advice to the children was, do this for how it benefits you? It will help your anxiety, your self-esteem. So even in showing kindness, it's actually all about yourself. It's about how you can be benefited from showing kindness to others. That's the opposite of what's going on there in Proverbs. You get the same thing in people like Jordan Peterson. You care about other people for how it benefits your own self-optimization. Again, it's a self-focus. There's an interest in other people, but it's an interest in other people for how they can help you. It's all self-focused. It's as if the universe is mine. Well, it's not. It's God's universe. And Proverbs is different. It is life in God's universe. And we sort of introduced this book at the start of May, and a little bit on how to read Proverbs, which I'm going to sort of assume here this morning. But just to say this, it's not self-help. what we're doing this morning is not five steps to better friendships. I'm not going to go through each proverb based on friendship today in detail, because that's your job. That's the whole point. We're meant to go away and think on this ourselves. I wonder, are you applying what I said at the start of May? I said, spend a bit less time on your phone and instead go to God's Twitter page, the book of Proverbs. Have you actually done that? You've had 5 weeks, you know, a month has gone by. Have you actually done that? If not, you obviously don't think God's got much wisdom for your life. You think whatever you're reading on your phone or whatever has more wisdom than what God has said. It must be. Because if you didn't think that, you would have been reading it. And if you have been reading it, I hope that that has been something that you've been blessed by. So what I want to do this morning is look at what Proverbs assumes. If you like, what it reveals about life in God's universe. Because you are someone made by God. And there is actually a little link to what we did last time about prosperity. Because Abraham, as we think about Abraham last time, Abraham is described as a friend of God. We'll come back to that at the end. So, what is friendship? Well, let me read these two proverbs to you. 17 verse 17. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. And of course, the way Proverbs works, that means a friend is there for adversity as well. That's the whole point. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Whatever else you say about friendship, it is something precious. In many ways, it's not easy to define, but we all know it, don't we, when we see it? Or perhaps we know it most of all when we don't see it, when we miss it. Think of Job in his distress. He was looking for help and support and loyalty. And instead, he says he was a laughing stock to the people that were supposed to be his friends. Or think of David, what we read there about Jonathan. Jonathan shared David's heart. It was actually what they shared was a heart for God. And it was very costly for Jonathan. He put loyalty to David and to God's purpose above his own interests and future. He was a support in David's time of need, a time of loneliness for David. And then later in David's life, when he was in this mess of his own making, fleeing Jerusalem, you find Shimei, who is not a friend. He just says, well, serves you right. Do you have friends like that? You get into trouble? Yeah, serves you right. Well, he wasn't a friend. Hushai was. He's described as David's friend. And he risked everything to speak up for David to Absalom. And then there's Barzillai that we thought about before, who cared, who showed kindness and generosity in bringing food and supplies. He was sharing, if you like, in David's experience and David's distress. And if you've no idea what all that I was talking about there, read 2 Samuel chapters 15 to 19. Again, spend a little less time on your phone or whatever else. Why not read some chapters of scripture? It'll do you more good. So friendship is based, is an association based on something shared. Maybe a shared activity, a shared experience or interest. It's a connection with someone, isn't it? So that we understand them. And there's affection. It's not just we understand them, we like them. There's loyalty, there's support, there's help, there's kindness. With a friend, there's a sort of sense that they're on your side. If you like, it's the opposite of an enemy. And of course, friendship can be at lots of levels. It doesn't all have to be sort of of one sort of type. You can have friendships that are very deep and very long-lasting. But you can also have friendships that are more superficial and brief, and that's not wrong. The same word is used in Proverbs for both what is translated as neighbor and also as friend. It's talking about someone that you associate with. Maybe you're close in location, a neighbor. Maybe you're close in heart, more as we would call a friend. But not every friendship has to be as deep as that between David and Jonathan. It doesn't have to be that deep to be precious. Friendships are voluntary, and they can come and go as circumstances change. In other words, it's different to family. See, family is fixed, isn't it? It's not your choice. And you are not necessarily close emotionally to everyone in your family. You may or may not get on. But being family doesn't depend on how well you get on. It's a different sort of relationship. You may have a friend who is closer than a brother. And that also means that friendship is not the same as marriage. I hope there's plenty of overlap between friendship and marriage. You know, marriage includes friendship, but it's not the same thing as friendship. I hope there is understanding and kindness and love in marriage, but it is a different type of relationship. For one thing, marriage is something public. It's something recognized by society. It is a covenant you enter into before witnesses. It is something permanent. You don't drift into and out of marriage. And it's a union of people where now new life has the potential to be created. New image of God to be created. There's a new unit created in marriage. And even just saying those things, it makes me realize just how countercultural simply saying that is. What I've just said there about marriage is totally different to what most people, if you ask them about marriage today, what they would think. But this is God's universe, and that's what he says. Or to put it a different way around, friendship is not sexual. There's not a verse in Proverbs for this because it's so obvious, because it's God's universe. It's assumed. Sex belongs in male-female marriage alone. David was one in spirit with Jonathan, not one in body. And again, that is so countercultural, isn't it? It means that friendship is not friends. Think of the TV show. The one thing that that show is not is friendship, by a biblical understanding. There, they sleep with each other. You have these continually changing relationships. Friendship, according to the Bible, is not friends. We're in God's universe. And whether you like it or not, it is the universe we inhabit. And in that universe, sex does not make or cement a friendship. In fact, it destroys them. That has implications for how we even use the sort of terminology, I think, of boyfriend, girlfriend. That is actually not some sort of precursor to marriage. It's something actually rather different. It changes how we understand same-sex relationships. Friendships are protected. They are precious precisely by being non-sexual. And I think as churches, we need to be aware of this. We can be so focused on affirming marriage that we don't also value friendship as something a little bit distinct. And in particular, valuing same-sex friendship. That is something good. That is something positive. That is something to be encouraged. Same-sex friendships is made by God. The problem is when we start to make it something sexual. That isn't what God's pattern for friendship is. So, friendship made. It's made by God, okay? It's God's universe, it's God's idea. Friendship is not our idea, it's not just a pragmatic way to survive life. Friendship is actually part of being the image of God. Showed a diagram in the Bible study we did a couple of weeks ago, that sort of trying to show our identity as people made as God's image, and part of the key thing is that we are connected to other people. We are made social. We are made for relationship. Think of it like this. Humans are like Velcro. Okay, we keep making connections. We're sticky. We stick to each other. We constantly are making friendships of one sort or another. They may be, you know, it might just be a training day at work. You make a friendship that you almost never meet the person again, but there's a friendship for that day. The other friendships can be more permanent or bigger or whatever. But we are always making these connections. We are bits of Velcro making connection with other bits of Velcro. Think of that Castaway film with Tom Hanks. He was so desperate for friendship that he makes an imaginary friend out of that volleyball, doesn't he? Called Wilson, I think it was, wasn't it? Why? It's because it's how we're made. It is not good for man to be alone. In other words, community is assumed. Again, this is so countercultural. It is not the individualism of Western culture. Our Western culture says you are self-sufficient as an individual. It's about your own self-optimization. If others are involved, it's for your self-fulfillment. The focus is on yourself. And as that quote on the sheet shows, that is actually what leads to loneliness and insecurity. God's universe, the world of Proverbs, is different. It assumes a connection with people and a responsibility for people. He who despises his neighbor sins, but blessed is he who is kind to the needy. Do not withhold good from those who deserve it when it's in your power to act. Do not say to your neighbor, come back later, I'll give it to you tomorrow, when you have it with you now. You see, we have a responsibility for one another. And in fact, to live in that way stops loneliness. It actually gives security as we depend on others for care. We need one another. So there's a sense in which it's actually good to have lots of friends. But we are limited in the number of close friends we can have. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. If you like, there's a greater value on close friendships. And why is that? Because we are creatures. In other words, we are limited. It takes time and a lot of energy, actually, to maintain strong relationships. There is a limit to how many people you can know well. You can't know everyone. You can't keep up with every friend. We need to accept that. Loyalty does not mean keeping every friendship permanently. That's impossible. It's actually far better to invest in current friendships, to have deeper relationships. You see, social media gives the illusion of being free of our creaturely limitations. You know, you don't need to be in the same place to communicate. But on its own, that will only create thin relationships. Proximity matters. Better a neighbor nearby than a brother far away. Physical closeness matters because we are physical people. If you want a C in this list, you can have the word corporeal, but I thought physical might be a bit simpler to follow. We are physical people with bodies. Look how Moses' relationship with God is described. The Lord would speak to Moses face to face as a man speaks with a friend. What does that assume about friendship? Isn't that interesting? So you get the same idea in the second and third letter of John, where he says, well, okay, I'm communicating by letter, that'll sort of have to do, but face-to-face is really what we want it to be. And isn't that something we learn in the pandemic? You know, Zoom is great, but it's not the same as physical, is it? And our bodies do limit us. We can't be in two places at once. But it's how we're made. And it makes for better friendships. It is very hard to make deep friends online if there is no other connection. And you can never be friends with a chatbot. It's not a person. It's just electrons moving around. And actually, here's another application, TV personalities. I'm always struck by when sometimes, you know, TV personalities or film stars die, people sort of say, oh, I feel like I've lost a friend. That is nonsense. That is an utter illusion. You know, there's people on a screen in your home and you think they're there with you. They're not. You know, remember, they can't see you. You know, the child's you know, misunderstanding people on a screen, or they can see me. No, they can't. They don't know you. You don't know them. Often people are very different off screen. Whatever else TV personalities are, they are not your friends. And yet many people live their lives as if they are. You need a body for communication. And this is the other key element in friendship. You see, we reflect as the image of God, a God who speaks. Friendship relies on communication. And that means there are an awful lot of proverbs that are relevant to friendship, more than those than just doing a word search for friend. Okay, all the proverbs on speech are very relevant for friendship, which is why it's good to read through the whole book of Proverbs, why they're all jumbled up. They all interrelate. And you'd think that today we would be sorted on this, wouldn't we, the communication thing. It's just so easy to communicate. But easy communication doesn't mean better communication. And I think we've all experienced that, haven't we, in the frustration of, why don't they respond? You know, they didn't answer my question or whatever. Or they've misunderstood again. You know, texting can be okay, can't it? It can be helpful to confirm arrangements, something very simple, something factual. But it's a pretty terrible way to communicate. Sometimes I've been on these sort of long exchanges on WhatsApp where you've got these messages going backwards and forwards. And it's a terrible way to communicate, really, in a sort of a conversation. If you just picked up the phone and talked to someone, there'll be far less misunderstanding. Half the WhatsApp conversation is people misunderstanding what you've just said or not getting the tone of what you just said or whatever it is. Talking together, even on a phone, is so much better. And if you can have two bodies together, that's even better still, because we communicate so much with our bodies. We can hide so much, even behind a voice. You can tell so much, can't you, sometimes, just seeing someone walk in a room. And the medium that we use changes the message. Twitter has its uses, blogs have their uses. But you can't communicate everything in a few lines. It's going to change how you discuss things. WhatsApp groups, they are not the same as one-to-one communication. Effectively, it's like having a conversation with spectators, which is actually a very strange thing. Imagine, you know, talking to someone and having a whole load of people all around you staring at you while you're talking to someone. Well, that's really what's going on in a WhatsApp group. It's very strange. And I think it changes what it is then appropriate to say. True friendship involves words. And sometimes correcting words. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of one's friend springs from his earnest counsel. As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Again, isn't that just so countercultural? Wounds from a friend. Correction. A friend saying, you are wrong. Oh, you can't say that. That's goes against all sorts of things today, doesn't it? Well, if you can't say what's wrong, you're not going to have friendship. Because true friendship involves correction and rebuke. And that earnest counsel, it comes from having the other person's interests at heart, not your own. There's a stimulation that comes from others, the idea that you can learn from someone else. So often, part of the problem with so much electronic communication is it's so focused on what we are giving out. It's focused on us talking and trying to have as big an audience for our wonderful thoughts as we can. Whereas actually true biblical wisdom is shutting up and listening. You see, to give wise, correcting counsel, you need to know someone. And to know someone, you need to listen. To understand them, you need to listen. And again, it's one of these things. Everyone thinks they're a good listener. 99.9% of us are rubbish listeners. We're far better at talking. We're very bad at listening when we don't really want to hear what the other person is saying. When perhaps it is something that is actually very important to the other person. Read Proverbs. Our listening skills are so important. Holding our tongue can be the greatest source of wisdom. We need to communicate. And if you like, what we've already done there is shown sort of how we don't do these things. Friendship is broken. And really, this is what Proverbs assumes, isn't it? It assumes sin. Most of the Proverbs are about things going wrong. So God made friendship, but we've messed it up. And sin is really trying to make God's universe my universe, trying to make God's universe serve me. It's sort of trying to rig the system to benefit me. So if like God set up the system, we're trying to sort of rig it so that it can benefit me. That's really what sin is. We're trying to manipulate and control. And as we do that, we will abuse friendship to get what we want, to have the benefits but not the costs. That's what we will try and do. That's what sin is like. It's very unattractive, but it's in all of us. And as a result, friendship can hurt rather than bless. Friends can be a bad influence. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn his ways and get yourself ensnared. The character of friends matters. Yes, we are all sinful, but some are more dangerous. Some sins and some people are more dangerous than others. And to some extent, this depends on who you are. I think it's a bad idea to surround yourself with people who are too similar to you in what they are struggling with. And yet that is often what can bring people together, isn't it? If you're struggling with addiction or eating disorders or a love of money or whatever it is, surrounding yourself with people struggling with the same things is probably a bad idea. That is where a connection is an unhelpful thing. And you see, the problem is not, in a sense, other people. The problem is ourselves. We are so sinful that we are shaped by others for the worse. That's the real problem. It's not, in a sense, other people. It's the fact that I'm so sinful that I get influenced by that. Money breaks friendships. It distorts friendships. You'll find many proverbs are about loans and the danger of them. And we can't go into this now, but you need to understand those commands in the context of the whole life of Old Testament Israel. It doesn't mean that it is always wrong to have a loan or something like that. But the warning is that there are dangers with it. And it's really about power. You get a power imbalance between the debtor and the creditor, the one who owes and the one who gives. And that sort of power imbalance applies in lots of ways, doesn't it, in friendships? We see that applied today, don't we? How someone in a position of power or influence can use that in a way that distorts a friendship. So that could be through money, but it could also be through other things, through opportunities they're able to give. Just think of some of the things that have been in the news recently. Distorts friendships, power and money. And look at this one. Wealth brings many friends, but a poor man's friends desert him. There's a loneliness in being poor, but I think you're even more lonely if you're rich. Because who's your real friend? Think of how people will flock to a rich person. Why are they coming to you? Is it because they love you or they love your money? Who are your real friends? There's an awful loneliness in riches. It's crazy how we sort of hanker after it. It's a miserable life, being really rich. Horrendous loneliness, I think, in that. Beware. Words. We use words not only to communicate, but to control. Flattery. Whoever flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his feet. Flattery is manipulation. You are getting what you want out of a friend by being nice to them, flattering them. It's not about their good, it's about what you can get out of them. Gossip. A perverse man stirs up dissension, and a gossip separates close friends. Using words to cast others in a bad light so that you can look better. Betraying confidences. That is hugely damaging to friendship. Friendship is built on trust. So we need to be super careful in an age where it is so easy to share information. And in churches, we've got to be aware of this. You know, prayer requests are a great way to cloak gossip in something that sounds okay. Be really careful. Don't ever think of our data protection policy either as some sort of just bit of administrative, legal, pointless paper. Here's a sentence in it. Passing on information about people inappropriately is a serious sin. Do you ever talk about that sin? Well, that's a sin too, and I think that is in line with what we find in Proverbs. We need to think about what information is shared. Lying destroys relationships too, doesn't it? We've seen that again. And finally, thoughtlessness, a lack of care. Seldom set foot in your neighbor's house. Too much of you, and he will hate you. Now, I think this is a great example of a proverb that has many applications beyond the literal setting your foot in a neighbor's house. I think it applies actually to this stuff about words. Oversharing. I think older generations have tended to be more private, be a bit more guarded in what they will share. The younger generation today, it's very much about you share anything and everything. And there's certain aspects to that that I think can be helpful. But is it always helpful? You know, do I actually need to know that? Does everyone need to know that? Or this sort of application, you know, every problem, you go to your neighbor's house. We have a sort of a culture that is lacking in resilience. We think if we have a problem, there should be someone there that comes along to sort it out for me. Not in God's universe. There is personal responsibility. You can put too much dependence on a friend. For every problem, no, don't just go to someone else to fix it. Seldom set foot in your neighbor's house. This is where you can see you need a bit of time to reflect on how these proverbs work. If a man loudly blesses his neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. Well, I used to do that as a postman in the days when you had the post arriving really early on a Saturday morning. I'd love banging on the door really loudly and being super cheery when people are coming down. What's all this? But again, there's a wider application than this. We can be tone deaf emotionally, can't we? And again, it's where the focus is on myself. It's not about what the other person needs and feels. It's not putting yourself in the other person's shoes. It's just about you. And what about this one? Like a madman shooting firebrands or deadly arrows is a man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was only joking. Again, it's thoughtless. It's very easy to excuse sin by making it into a joke. And I think this is something, a particular problem in UK culture, where it is seen as really important to have a sense of humor. If you don't have a sense of humor, that's a really bad thing. So in other words, if you can make a joke out of something, you can get away with it. If you can make a joke about being drunk or being cruel to someone or defrauding them, then what ordinarily people would sort of be shocked at is actually okay, or you've made a joke about it. So there's lots of ways that friendship can be spoiled. You see, friendship is a bit complicated, isn't it? And the lesson is this: friends will let you down, and you will let down friends. So don't make friendship, however precious it is, don't make it the ultimate, the biggest thing in your life. Don't find your identity, your worth in friends. Don't look for your happiness just in friends, because it can't deliver. Like a bad tooth or a lame foot is reliance on the unfaithful in times of trouble. Many a man claims to have unfailing love, but a faithful man who can find. You see the problem. Who is faithful? Who is faithful always, totally? There isn't always a friend who sticks closer than a brother. They'll let you down. So where do we go with this? Proverbs is not self-help. If you like, the message this morning is not ultimately be a better friend. The whole point is we can't do that ourselves. It is not self-help. The message is this: remember, you are in God's universe, so let's go to the God who made friendship. That's where we can find friendship restored. Abraham was called a friend of God three times in the scripture. God is never called anyone's friend. You see the difference? Abraham is a friend of God, but you don't say God is my friend. The one place actually where that is said, Jeremiah 3 verse 4, it is saying that it is wrong to do so. Why? Because God is not your equal. God is not your mate. And yet, God has all the qualities of a perfect friend. He is faithful and honest, understanding, caring. He is near. It was right to sing, "What a friend we have in Jesus." We're expressing something true about God. And Jesus had lots of friends. Lots of people saw Jesus as their friend, someone on their side. He was the friend of sinners. The disciples were friends, and some were closer than others. Jesus was not equally friendly with everyone. He was closer, it seems, to Peter, James, and John, for example, amongst the disciples. That is not wrong. And yet, those disciples were not good friends to him. They were asleep. They ran away in his hour of need. When he needed them most, angels had to come and help Jesus because his disciples were so rubbish. Peter denied he even knew Jesus. You see, they weren't very good friends. And Jesus, knowing all that, said this before he was crucified: "Greater love has no one than this, than he lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command." I mean, that's what shows you it's not a relationship of equals. Jesus isn't your mate. No, you do what he commands. "I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends, for everything that I've learned from my Father I've made known to you." Jesus goes to lay down his life for them and for all who will trust in him. He will pay for their sin, and in doing so, restore that broken friendship, that broken relationship. Jesus can promise to be with you forever. And when you come to him and when you trust him, you are part of a family, part of the church. And strikingly, the epistles that most frequently address the church as friends, it's Peter and John's epistles, actually. James didn't write an epistle because he was killed too early. The other James we have is the brother of Jesus. Interesting, their friendship with Jesus, did that colour how they viewed their friendship with the church? Because if you are friends with Jesus, you are friends with Jesus' friends. And if you're not friends with Jesus' friends, you're not friends with Jesus. So if we lived out the friendship of Proverbs, the friendship we see in Jesus, we truly would be a friendly church. Every church thinks they're a friendly church. But are we? Do we reflect the friendship of Jesus? Does Jesus count you as his friend?